Blog
American Conservative Party Radio. I'm Tracy.
And I'm Bill.
And we're here to host another edition of Weekly Conservative Talk. This evening, I want to start off with the news.
Oh boy, we got news.
Yes. Fanatic shot and killed a community member over the weekend.
Yep.
News media reported that a religious fanatic took aim at a prominent member of the community, cut him down in his prime.
Yes, they did.
Media attention was extreme.
Lots of news about that.
In other news, a fanatic opened fire on a member of the community, killing an honorable member of the community. Media attention, non-existent.
Meh.
The religious fanatic, seen, heard, and captured 3 hours later.
Yes, indeed.
Now, I'm sure the people that are actually listening to this show
mm-hmm.
can tell you which of those two news stories actually happened in real life. Let me hear. Yes. That's right. Both of them did. Missed one of them? Don't be surprised.
Yeah.
Who is who? Let me see. We get a religious fanatic killing a prominent member of the community and a religious fanatic killing a prominent member of the community.
Yes. You'd
think they'd get equal play, wouldn't you?
You would think.
But only one of them did. Doc, you know what? Here's how much I paid attention to those stories. I don't know where they happened.
Oh. Well, I can tell you where the second one happened.
Please feel free.
Arkansas.
The other one was like Kansas?
Yeah, I think.
Okay. So, here in the beautiful Midwest, we apparently have religious fanatics of more than one kind.
Yes, we do.
Now, the question I have is this. Why was the media so intent on ignoring one and blaring the other? I have an opinion.
Aha! Uh-huh. I suspect that opinion probably I will share.
Probably. See, in the second one, that was a military man that was killed, and of course, one less soldier is a good thing for most on the left.
Yep.
And of course, the other one was an abortion doctor, and one less of them is not a good thing on the left.
Not a good thing at all for the libs.
Now, personally, myself, both events were religious fanatics committing murder.
Absolutely.
In both cases, the victims were honorable men in their community, law-abiding citizens.
Yes, they were. I don't know that I'll go for honorable, but they were definitely law-abiding citizens of their community.
There is no indication, based on the information that we have, that they were anything other than honorable.
Okay.
I'm not suggesting that their morality had anything to do with anything.
No, I will absolutely agree. And you know the thing that I find really interesting about this?
Yeah.
The thing that really strikes me is And I suspect that you were on Twitter the same time that I was when all that went down. The Twitter community, at least, roundly condemned both religious fanatics.
Yeah.
Saying that was absolutely and totally unacceptable.
Yes.
Only the lib community had a problem with the first killing.
Well, as I suggest, the reason the mainstream media didn't there was, look, right, I mean, you know, a military recruiter's job, beyond the fact that he's a recruiter, okay, is to serve in the military.
Absolutely.
To kill and be killed.
Yep.
Therefore, his death, though dishonorable in the sense of a Klingon, cut down without battle, was within keeping of his job duties, so the left just doesn't care. Of course, as somebody mentioned today, and I agree, we've not heard any particular word from the Obama administration whether they deplore the bloodshed of one of their civil servants.
Well, and even more so than that, as commander-in-chief, wouldn't you consider the killing of one of the members of the forces that you command a heinous act?
Ah, what's one more or less?
Yeah, I know.
Sorry. You know what? Frankly, I don't expect him to show up unannounced at any military hospital with, you know, cameras long since disposed of.
Oh, no. That would not be in keeping with his M.O. so far.
All right. We are in agreement. The general idea is that we've had two murders, one on the left, one on the right, both of them heinous murders.
Yep.
Both of them absolutely, without any equivocation, wrong.
Absolutely.
Period. Done.
Period.
End of story.
Yep.
That's my opinion. That's where that story ends, unless you've got something particular to say, because done.
Well, I guess the only thing that I want to say is that one story is still alive. That's the first one. The other story is dead, dead, dead. And that's wrong.
Well, the first story is going to have a life, and the second story is stillborn.
Yep.
Absolutely. you and I, and most of the people that listen to this show, will honor the second one forever.
Yes.
Because he served us.
He served his country. Absolutely.
And I shall honor that forever.
Yep.
Now, going on.
Okay.
Because generally speaking, you know, one of the things Victoria says, don't you care what goes on? And I'm sitting there like going, no. Okay? I didn't care about the O.J. trial. I didn't care about the second O.J. trial. I didn't care about John and Kate. I don't care about a whole crock of things in the world. And the reality is those murders are going to affect their families and communities for a long time, and they have absolutely zero impact on me. So, no, I don't care.
Okay. I can understand that. I think that the basic premise is right. I think the handling of those two cases is what affects us.
Why? Because in the big scheme of things, things, neither story is being handled any way out of the ordinary for those stories.
I don't disagree with you, but I'm saying that the way they're handled is wrong.
Yeah, but we're not going to change it.
No, we aren't. Well, yeah, we aren't. You and I aren't going to change it by ourselves. Is it changeable? Yeah, it is. Sure it is. You bet.
Sure. If we want to get 50 million people to get onto the board, but, you know, we can't get 50 million people to get on board for damn near anything anymore.
Well, that yeah, that's true.
Okay, you know what? I'd be happy if we get 5 million people on board. If we could get 5 million people on board for something, I think that would be rather interesting.
But you know what? We don't have to get all 5 million of them. We only have to get about 10 each. And those 10 each only have to get about 10 each. Yeah.
Okay. So if you want to change reporting and you're in Wisconsin, call me and we'll all call the newspaper and say what a bunch of idiots they are for not covering both stories equally.
And then you contact their advertisers.
I'm one of their advertisers.
Then you need to rethink.
I actually didn't pay for it. It was called Garage.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Okay, let's go on to the other news here. All right.
Oh, Lord.
One of the big things today, actually this week, was that Obama loves the union so much, he bought them a company.
He did. He got them their own Tonka toys.
Except, and I just can't understand this. It just doesn't make any sense. Of course, the Hummers.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Will now be built by the Chinese.
Fortunately for us, these are not the HMMVWs that the military uses, folks. Let's make that really clear. These are the civilian versions. Look a little bit alike, but vastly different.
You know, I believe that, you know, farming out production to the third world is a way in which we can focus in on things that are more high-tech and more productivity-oriented and a way to get third world to have manufacturing, high-value manufacturing jobs so that we can build middle classes in those third world countries, thereby increasing their standard of living, thereby making them more oriented towards capitalistic and democratic processes.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, that is a classic case of how we export, I want to say democracies, but actually democracies aren't all that great, folks.
But it's like exporting, you know, I don't know, you know, cylinder production to Iran.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, exactly. It's like ho-hum. I think the objection is a visceral objection. I think it's...
Right.
Yeah. How dare we do that? You know?
A knee-jerk reaction. Yep. I don't care that Hummer got sold. I don't care that Hummer got sold to a foreign country, to companies in foreign countries. Don't care. Not a big deal. In that regard, it's not a problem for me.
Right.
What's the old biblical phrase? Avoid all appearances of evil?
Yeah, something like that.
Okay, Obama looks to be taking that one step farther. Avoid all appearances of being smart. I mean, you know.
Yeah. No, you have the right word there.
So GM, the Obama administration, takes the unions under their wings, or under their bumpers, as the case may be, and satisfies them at the expense of damn near every investor on the planet. Thank you very much. But
it's
not enough. It's not enough to screw 21,000 GM workers.
Nope.
50,000 employees of the various suppliers of GM. Not enough. Not enough to screw the investors.
Nope.
Ooh.
You know, I heard an interesting number today.
What was that number?
And the interesting number is the new downsized GM will employ a total of 40,000 people directly.
Okay, let me see. That is about 40, that's about 50% the size it is now.
Yep.
Are they talking about worldwide?
That was not clear in the comment that I read.
Because if it's worldwide, then it's only 25% of their current.
Exactly. So I don't know. So I'm still trying to do a little research on that.
You know, here's my problem. I don't, you know, I think I'd have a hard time believing that GM could be of any appreciable size as far as the market is concerned with 40,000 employees.
Exactly.
Even if they were extremely efficient and actually producing things that people want.
Exactly.
I don't think 40,000 people is enough.
It isn't. Not in today's world and today's market. I mean, that it's ludicrous. I mean, that's a niche of a niche. That comes nowhere close to being able to satisfy transportation needs of this nation, let alone the world. And obviously, GM is not doing that by themselves.
So the question I would have in that regard is, is this the result of a GM bankruptcy in the face of an overwhelming recession, especially in durable goods? Or is this the result of government walking in and screwing up a funeral procession? Would the result that GM is going to be have occurred had it been anybody other than Obama administration sticking their fingers, their toes, their tongues, their ass into this?
Yes, I absolutely believe that. And here's why I believe that. Given a rational economic policy in the administration, GM would have been allowed to go bankrupt way before any TARP funds got put into it, way before any stimulus funds got put into it, or anything else. It would have been allowed to go bankrupt. That gives it an opportunity in a Chapter 11, and you are much more versed in this than I am. That would have given it the opportunity to size itself without governmental interference to producing vehicles that the market actually wants to buy. And it would have been able to abrogate its contracts and renegotiate them. Assuming that they were good negotiators, they would have been able then to be able to say, folks, time to face reality. And when I say folks, I'm meaning the UAW, and say, it's time, folks. You people have to understand it is either you have a job, some of you, not all of you, but some of you, and that has to be sustainable over the long term. Now we don't have that. Not only do we not have that, we now have the government owning General Motors, putting people on the board. We have Canada owning a portion of GM, 12% is the number that I heard. We have the union, UAW, owning GM. And I want to be in the negotiating room when the owners of GM, UAW, and the union, UAW, sit down and negotiate with each other.
It's a blatant conflict of interest, and the bankruptcy judge is clearly being forced into positions that are not consistent with bankruptcy law.
Absolutely. Not only that, but the secured bondholders just got screwed. Now, if you think that secured bondholders are the fat cats of the world, let me tell you, folks, that ain't true. The secured bondholders are the folks that had that stuff in their 401k, in their IRA. Those are the people who just got screwed.
You know, it's the same people that got screwed by Madoff. It's the same people that got screwed by many similar type situations.
Yep.
You know, I'm not. My problem with their actions in the bankruptcy court is that, you know, it's the same one that we've had with Obama all along. It is a blatant disregard for the rule of law.
Absolutely. You can just kiss that one goodbye.
Where that's going to go is just, you know, there's no good that's going to come of it. Just no good that's going to come of it.
I can't imagine any investor investing in the new GM.
You know, a friend of mine, Tom Bloomer, who does busyblog.com, has been a pretty big commenter on the general idea that if GM went into bankruptcy, nobody would buy GM cars. Now, I've basically disagreed with that point of view, because if a company looks like it's going to go into Chapter 11 and fix the problems that exist, or at least address the problems that are maybe beyond its control, but it's less able to nimbly deal with those things, you know, where bankruptcy court gives them a chance to, you know, make those moves a little less nimbly than they would in the normal market.
Yep.
I don't have any problem with, you know, continuing to support that company, knowing that its actions are beneficial to its long-term health.
Yes, absolutely.
And so up until December or January, GM going into bankruptcy was not a problem for me. I looked at it and went, if GM comes out of bankruptcy in better shape than it went in, there's no reason in the world not to buy its cars.
And maybe even gets a sympathy vote.
Yeah, you know, if they actually fix things, you know, I'm all for supporting them.
Absolutely.
You know, we've owned two GM cars. We've leased two GM cars in the last 5 years, and I liked them a lot. They were good vehicles. They handled well. They were well worth the money, and I was very impressed by them.
They aren't the Chevy Bolt, though, are they?
No. No, they were both actually recliners on wheels. I mean, I had a Silverado pickup truck that was comfortable as all hell. And I had a Malibu Max, which was extremely great car. I love that car.
Mm-hmm.
One of my biggest mistakes ever was not taking that thing out of the lease and just buying it. It was I regret that to this day.
Yep.
But, you know, GM going into bankruptcy now, not interested.
Not me.
Not interested. You know, they might actually produce reasonable cars, you know, but I don't trust it.
No.
You know, I trust that it'll be around. I just don't, I was a member of the executive committee for the American Conservative Party for its first year. And I said it to the committee on a regular basis. You heard it from me, Bill, as a member of that committee. And one of the reasons I've avoided getting involved in a lot of other activities is because I simply hate committees.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you want to really get something done and you want to get it done right, the committee is about the worst way you can do it.
Yeah.
And GM is effectively, right now, based on the fact that UAW is going to run things and build things, you know, a committee of two.
Mm-hmm.
And a really shitty committee by both members. And Obama.
Well, and what's even worse, Tracy, is it's a political committee.
Yeah, this is, you know, Obama with his things, we're going to appoint an independent board, and they're going to, tell it, and they're going to build this kind of car, and they're not going to do this, and then what independent board?
Exactly.
They're being told by the President of the United States what they can build. They're being told where they can build it. They're being told how it's going to be built, and they're going to be told who's going to sell it, which is the last of my comments to make about GM.
And there are a multiplicity of stories just in what you said. The first one that springs to mind is, does everybody know who it is that's in charge of restructuring GM? If you aren't aware of that, let me acquaint you with the 31-year-old law student, not graduate, law student, who was a campaign worker for Mr. Obama, who is in charge of restructuring GM. And at one point, he was the only guy there.
Okay. This is what I have to say. Okay? There are really brilliant 31-year-olds.
Yep.
There are people that simply have an ability to function at a level that most of us are just kind of going to drop our jaws and go, holy shit, that guy is a genius.
Yep.
Brilliant genius.
Absolutely.
I can tell you, based on my experience watching and listening to Barack Obama, without ever having met that 31-year-old, he's not a genius.
No, he isn't.
Because Barack Obama does not, will not, cannot tolerate anybody that even remotely could be construed as having 2 ounces worth of brain matter more than him.
I agree.
So if Obama picked him, he's an idiot.
Yep.
All right. Let's talk about the dealerships for a second because it's kind of important. People are making a big deal about it, and I think it should be made a big deal about.
Yep.
Fact that GM is closing a certain amount. Sorry. We're going to get to the GM part of it. Chrysler dealerships.
Yes.
Are being closed to weed out those non-productive dealerships, those dealerships that are not helpful for getting new Chrysler product out amongst the masses.
That's exactly right. Boy, is that right.
Yep, that's what we're supposed to believe. We're going to get rid of the chaff, get rid of the marginal dealerships. In this case, apparently, the Obama administration believes that any dealership, regardless of how many cars it sells, regardless of how profitable it is, regardless of what community it serves, if the ownership of that dealership supports Republicans, it's out. It's gone. We're finished. It's out of here.
Yep. Goodbye.
And if your dealership sucks wind, but it supports Democrats, hallelujah.
We got ourselves a viable dealership here.
I'm saved by the Obama.
Oh, yeah. I heard a number that said of those dealerships that are closing, there was a total of $547 that was donated to Obama. A whole $547.
Rounding error.
Must have been. and somebody
should get fired for that $546.
Oh yeah. So and there are folks that are putting those numbers together. Right now they have something like an 87% confidence rate. And for those of you who are not familiar with statistics, 95% is the gold standard. Okay? If you have a 95% confidence, then you got it. Okay, so it's about 7% away from being take it to the bank baby in terms of those dealerships that were closed versus those that are left open, and the correlation between that and support of Obama, we're real close to being able to have some pretty good confidence in that. We aren't there yet. And I don't know how many people are listening right now, but if any of you know a Chrysler dealer that is being closed, I would love to get my hands on one of those franchise agreements, because my guess is that if you go through that and then you apply those rules to who got closed, who got left open, you're going to find some major discrepancies.
Well, I can guarantee this. There is not one single Chrysler dealership that when this is done, that I'm going to trust.
Yep, absolutely.
Not one.
Not one. And not because I won't necessarily do business with a liberal-owned business, but because if they will sell out that badly, I can't trust them to not sell me out if I buy their product.
Oh, I go even one step a little bit farther than that.
Okay.
You know, I'm of the mind that if you're a surviving dealership, you were willing to take advantage of a political environment, government's willingness to beat upon your competition in such a way as that, as a capitalist organization, you're not going to get my vote. You know, so I would suggest that if in fact, and in my opinion, we're really close to the point, and I agree with your comments about, you know, percentage and confidence levels. We're really close to the point where I'm sitting there kind of going, you know, I don't care at this point if the only American manufacturer of automobiles left in the United States is Chrysler. I won't buy it.
Right. Exactly. You know, and it is such a shame. I mean, I have a VW Golf. Okay? I have that vehicle because it was the highest mileage diesel that I could find. I get 43 miles to the gallon. Are you telling me, can anybody seriously make the case that American car manufacturers couldn't have done the same thing? I'm sorry, I don't believe that. They could have. And they would have gotten dollars from people like me. And I did that before the $5 a gallon fuel costs, folks.
The only place that I see this as a problem, you know, Obama is killing GM because he gave it to the unions, and the unions are going to do a really good job of killing it.
Yep.
I'm pretty convinced of that. Chrysler is killing itself with much help from the Obama administration because they're making it appear as if, you know, political power is determining, you know, who's going to be winners and losers in the small communities that these dealerships serve.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I'm not buying that. But nope. I think Ford is correct in that given Obama's activities in Chrysler and GM, Ford is in a world of hurt
when
it comes to union negotiations and stuff like that.
Yep.
Despite the fact that I firmly believe a great number of people are going to avoid Chrysler and GM, and they're going to buy Ford because that's all that's left.
That's exactly right.
And
but they are going to be in a terrible disadvantage. when you have the full force and weight of the United States government actively working for your competition, you are in a world of hurt.
I do think that at this particular point in time, Ford is in a great deal of trouble, even though it might be, selling-wise, the only thing that's viable.
Yep, I agree. So the lesson to that, folks, is you vote with your dollars.
All right. Let me see. Before we move on to something else, we have a caller from area code 864.
Oh, my goodness.
Caller, you're live. Tell me who you are and where you're calling from.
I would be Rick, and I would be from South Carolina.
Hey, Rick, how the heck are you, my man?
Well, doing well.
Good.
Talk to me, Rick. What's up?
Oh, not a lot. I just wanted kind of to drive your point home with Chrysler there. Because here in the greater Greenville metropolitan area, we have two Chrysler dealers.
Uh-huh.
One of which is Big O Dodge, owned by the Odom family, who's had a great deal of tragedy in their personal family in the last couple of years. The Mr. Odom, who was the original owner, he had a heart attack and passed away.
Mm.
And left the business to his son, Tanner, and Tanner just recently died in a car accident.
Hmm.
And so that left it to the younger brother, and I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but I know that they have always been staunch supporters of the Republican Party.
Mm-hmm.
The other Chrysler dealership is Benson. And Mr. Benson has ran three times unsuccessfully as a Democrat for a local Senate seat within the state. So I would say that they're probably in sales evenly matched. They've been around comparable amount of time, but Big O is getting closed down.
Hmm.
Whereas Benson's staying open.
Yeah, it's really stupid on their part. If you know, people are going in the communities, people are going to know which dealership was doing well and which one wasn't. And if they see, you know, the bad dealership that's always been a proud Democratic supporter surviving, and the profitable and really well-run Republican-oriented dealership being closed down, they're going to know that this was a political situation. You know,
mm-hmm.
I think people are going. There's going to be people that are going to support that, and that's
yes.
You know, that's certainly their choice, but there's going to be a lot of people that are not.
Well, that's the outcry now. You know, that's the people around here up in arms that Big O's getting closed down just because. If no other reason, they've got the sympathy because of the deaths in the family in the last 2 years.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it's an active topic of conversation in your community, Rick?
It is right now.
Yeah. Okay.
It's huge.
Hmm.
And, you know,
and the newspapers are carrying the story and all that kind of stuff, or what?
Not.
No.
I hear it on the conservative radio in the mornings, and I hear it from people that I talk to throughout the day.
Mm-hmm.
There is talk about a class action suit against Chrysler.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I've heard that.
Yeah, there's going to be lots of lawsuits about this. And what bothers me is that the bankruptcy courts are going to be in a lot of trouble. They're going to make the bankruptcy courts weaker because of these actions. And going forward into the economy the way it is, that's the wrong thing to do.
Absolutely.
It's the wrong thing to do. All right. I want to get off GM.
Okay.
Rick, you're welcome to stay with us if you want.
Sure.
Because we're going to go on very, very shortly, for just a real short period of time, I want to talk about Rush for a few moments, because I thought maybe I threw Rush under the bus this weekend just a little.
No.
Somebody had reported to me that Rush had said something, and I thought that might have been... My first reaction was, you know, you're taking it out of context. I can't imagine that Rush would have said that. And then they put up a quote that I later found out was probably pretty close to being what was actually said.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, you know, he can be a little over the top sometime. And I thought, you know, maybe that's a little bit of throwing under the bus. You know, I don't have any problem with Rush being really over the top because, frankly, that's what he does and that's what he wants to be.
Yep.
And, you know, if he wants to do that, that's fine. I don't have any problem with that. He's not trying to be president. He's not trying to be a Supreme Court justice. He's not running for the Senate. You know, he can be over the top.
He's the editorial page for broadcast radio. And we don't know anybody who goes over the top on that, do we?
Don't know. So I just wanted to say, hey, Rush, if you're listening.
Yeah, right.
No harm, no foul, dude. I'm there for you, dude. All right.
Yep.
By the way, Rush is not the leader of the conservatives.
No, he isn't. I don't know that we have one, but
he isn't. I can't think of anybody that is. I can't think of anybody. All right.
Me either.
Now, I want to be very, very certain that everybody that is paying attention, and none of you really care, because the people that I really want to hear this, I said this today. I'm a woman. I'm gay. I'm conservative. I'm agnostic. I am the firstborn of immigrants to this country. I am the partner of a woman that adopted a non-white child, so that my life story has some interesting little tidbits. And
you
I
have
a minority
compelling life story.
And I am a minority in at least, as best I can tell, 6 separate, distinct care, you know, categories.
Yeah.
Sotomayor is a big, fat racist.
Yes.
And you can take that to the bank.
You know, I almost bought into the, oh, she was taken out of context. So I clicked on the link for her full remarks. And folks, if you read everything that she said there, what's actually quoted is the least of it.
Yeah, you know, the only people that are taking her out of context are the people that are trying to defend her.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
frankly. Uh-huh. So, but I did hear, you know, Rush said something, and I actually thought about it today. You know, she's a Catholic. A devout Catholic, apparently.
Yeah, well, apparently so is Joe Biden.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you, you know, having grown up in a very Catholic environment.
Mm-hmm.
An environment in which Hispanics moved into the diocese, into the parish. They take their religion really seriously.
Mm.
And I would not be surprised if she was going to be extremely conservative with regards to the abortion question.
Really?
I don't think she'll say a word. I think she will use exactly the same comments that every other Supreme Court justice nominee for the last 20 years has said. You know, I don't think she's going to say anything that would suggest that she supports or does not support abortion in any way. But I think if somebody spends a significant amount of time with the idea and it's going to be construed the wrong way, but I think it needs to be. I think the libs have boxed themselves into a corner in this regard. I think if a Republican spends a fair amount of time discussing her devotion to her Catholic faith, I think the liberals will say, you're trying to pull a JFK, you know. She's not going to be listening to the Pope, and I really think that in this particular case, that's exactly what would be happening.
I'll be darned.
I actually think that she will not support abortion when push comes to shove, because her Catholic faith will prevent her from doing what she really wants to have done. Now, the opposite is possible.
Mm-hmm.
She could,
mm-hmm.
in order to try and show that she is absolutely not being, you know, influenced by her Catholic faith, she goes the other way. That's certainly a possibility.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's not been my experience in general with Hispanics and their Catholic faith. It is extremely important to them, and they are very devout in it. For those that are devout.
Yeah, right.
Is it.
Right.
So, I should find that to be rather interesting. But, you know, it doesn't stop her from being a racist little...
No, it doesn't.
I wouldn't say anything else. She is definitely racist. So there's no doubt about that.
Absolutely.
All right.
Yep.
Let's talk about North Korea for a moment.
Oh, man. Isn't that a kettle of worms?
You know, all they have to do, and I've said this a couple times to people, North Korea has to make sure that they have a 3-day war.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
if they can overrun and completely subdue South Korea in 3 days,
they got it made.
They got it made.
Yep.
Because they don't have supply lines. They don't have supplies.
They don't have supplies to supply a supply line.
So, you know, this is going to be a shout-out to any of my science fiction friends, okay? The North Koreans are going to be like Poselines. Poselines are an alien race that eat their dead and eat anything else that comes in their way. So they don't have supply lines. Whenever one of their comrades die in the line of fire, they're dinner. They just keep right on going. So, the North Koreans will be Poselines. They will simply eat whatever they find as they go through, and the faster they go through, the more they'll try to eat. But, 3 days. That's my opinion. If they think they can beat any defenses of the South Koreans in 3 days, I think they'll do it. And I think... Kim Jong-un will kill.
And his youngest kid.
And his youngest kid. I think they're going to do it before he croaks.
You think they're going to try it?
I think they're going to try it.
Hmm.
And I think all they need to do is for about 6 to 8 weeks, they need to shoot off one or two missiles a week. And after about 4 or 5 weeks, people will start going, oh, they're just shooting off another missile.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when they send the missile to where they want to go.
Hmm. Boy, that's interesting. Of course, that absolutely disregards the big tiger to the north there in your 3-day scenario.
You know, it's one of those things. I think Hussein made that judgment about Kuwait.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That if he could get in and get everything swiped up and cleaned up, it would be fait accompli. You know, everyone would run, you know, throw up their hands, you know, scream and yell, but in the end, they'd be let alone.
Hmm.
You know, they ran into a problem with Bush. In that regard.
Yep.
But I don't think they'll have that same problem with Obama. I think Obama will be just like what Gore would have been. You know?
Yeah.
You know,
oh, gosh, isn't that too bad? Thank you. Yeah, exactly.
you know, hands up in the air, yelling and screaming,
mm-hmm.
You can't do that, jumping up and down.
Let's go to the UN.
But in the end, nothing.
Nothing.
And I think China will be happy to get rid of our military presence.
Oh, yeah.
Off the South Korean Peninsula.
Mm-hmm.
Because at that point, that gives them pretty free and clear access, you know, to the North Pacific.
Yes. Absolutely.
And, you know, it puts China, Japan into a really nasty little spot.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that if Korea thinks they could get South Koreans overrun and taken care of in 3 days, I think China will be unfortunately indisposed for a few days, and we'll get back to you.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
I think it could happen that way.
Unless somehow Barack Hussein Obama grew a pair and said, nope, we have vital interest there, we're coming in which case I think that the Red Tiger says, no, I don't think so, we've got a million men we can send down there, and thank you very much, but you need to stay out of this regional conflict.
Well, that kind of leads me to where I was going next.
Good. We didn't rehearse that, folks.
Huh?
I said, we didn't rehearse that, folks.
We didn't rehearse
that. No.
Last week, two people from the United States went and visited China.
Yes, they
made
did.
Made little speeches in public.
Yes, they did.
And they were laughed at.
Yes, they were. And I'm still looking for somebody to come up with the clip of Tim A getting laughed at. God, I hope that's on some. I hope somebody got that recorded.
Yeah, I'm kind of along the lines that Pelosi and Geithner went over to China to make all kinds of sounds, and I think China basically said, you're idiots, goodbye, get out of here.
Yeah. And by the way, take a remedial course in mathematics.
And so I think, you know, up until very recently, people that said, you know, China will not let us do certain things that we want to do because then they'll just call our debt.
Mm-hmm.
And I always dismiss that because in the end, China has a reason to make sure that our debt stays viable.
Yeah, they do.
And so they're not just going to call it because that would create all kinds of problems for them.
Yes, it would.
One of those problems is that it would have a severe impact on our economy and therefore a severe impact on the Chinese economy.
Yeah.
Well, that severe impact is already happening.
Oh, really?
Certainly. And if it's already happening, but we're not, you know, what's China to lose?
Well, that's true. That's true.
So at this particular point in time, I don't think, you know, we have any comfort on the idea that China won't screw with us because they don't want to screw with our economy. They're already getting screwed, and our economy is already in trouble. So, you know, I'm willing to believe at this particular point, because things are bad, that China will not think they have a whole lot to lose.
I agree. And incidentally, did you see the story today? The Fed is buying the U.S. Treasuries. And to those of you who don't have a grasp of the finer points of that
yeah, but they've been doing that trying to keep the interest rates down, which is why the spread has gotten so way out of whack.
Exactly. But the point is, at least my point is, that means that they are monetizing the debt. When they monetize the debt, you get inflation. Yeah. The ugly I word.
and of course that creates all kinds of problems for
everybody.
Trading partners. But, yeah, there's been no doubt that that was going to happen. I mean, there was no choice in the matter.
That's right.
So, you know, China at this point, I don't see, first of all, I don't see Obama getting any, growing any cojones with regards to the Far East. It's, there's just no value to him.
Exactly.
To do something there.
Right. No, no.
He doesn't care about Japan. He certainly doesn't care about China.
Nope.
He doesn't care about Korea. There's nothing in the Pacific, you know, the Pacific Ocean that is of any value to him.
Yep, I agree.
So I don't see him expending any capital to try and do anything about it. Now, for many years, now we as conservatives have been lamenting over the last, oh, I don't know, 6 months, actually even a little longer, maybe almost a year, about the amount of debt that the U.S. government is accumulating.
Yes.
Now, I'm going to take a slightly contrarian point of view.
Okay.
For a long time, I have argued that the debt, for the most part, is irrelevant. That as a percentage of our GDP, it was minuscule, relatively speaking. I mean, you know, yeah, $1 trillion is a whole shitload of money, but relative to the economy, it's not. Okay, so I was less, for a lot of years, less worried about debt than many other people.
Yep.
Simply just not an issue.
Yeah.
And even to a certain extent with Bush over the last 8 years, it was, as long as the economy was growing, the change in the debt was, relatively speaking, was pretty consistent. So nothing had significantly changed. Now, things have significantly changed over the last 8 to 10 months.
Yes,
and the amount of debt that's being created is snowballing pretty big. However, in the big scheme of things, if it pretty much stops fairly soon, I don't think it's a problem. If it
that's a really big if.
Right. I think that if you can, if we today, you know, over the next 2 years, slowed and reversed the massive amounts of debt that's being created, and the economy is able to start returning, I don't think we have a huge big problem because of it over the next 5 to 8 years. Now, there are other issues out there, including Social Security and Medicare, and those I am not trying to diminish at all, and those are getting to be bigger problems now that we're getting farther along. However, if we were to stop the big spending now, I would not have a big problem with the debt.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see Obama doing that.
Oh, no. He's going to increase.
But he may not have any choice. As you suggested, with the Fed monetizing debt now, okay, they have no choice but to continue to do so. And there is a limit as to how much they can do. They don't think so, but anybody that I've ever read and any of my experience as far as economics is concerned, yeah, there's a limit.
Oh, yeah.
And they're going to approach it pretty damn fast the way things are going over the next year. So for the moment, I'm less concerned about debt, except for the fact that it looks like it's going to continue to grow. But if it were to stop or slow down at this point, I don't have a bigger I don't have such a big problem with it.
Well, I'm, you know, but you've got some really big ifs there, and the biggest if is, well, if it will stop or slow down, and I don't think that's in the cards with this administration.
That's true. All right, 40 seconds left.
Oh, my gosh. Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Well, in that case, a big shout-out to all of my CT buddies.
And to everyone else that's been following us on Twitter, we're getting pretty extensive in our Twitter things.
Yes, we are.
Arkansas
Traveler, hey, I hope you were listening.
Thanks, Pammy.
Yeah.
All right. Bill, thanks again. Nice week. Good week. Let's pay attention to what's going on, and I will talk to you next week.
You betcha. Everybody,
night,
good
everybody.
Night.
Bye. Done.
All right. God, I had no idea we were that close to being done. Last time I looked at my watch, we had 20 minutes.
Yeah, I looked and it said 4 minutes, and I went,
Oops, better wrap this one up. Oh, boy. Good show again.
Yeah, Victoria had her shower.
Oh, good. Okay.
So I don't have to rush away, although I have to change her dressing. I've been changing her dressing every day.
Oh, yeah? And that's her what, her heel?
Yeah, it's the heel.
Yeah. And how's it coming? Is it?
Well, we changed the medicine that we're putting on the wound.
Ah, okay.
You know what we changed it to?
What?
Sugar.
Ah, okay. Mm-hmm.
So.
Actually, I have heard that honey will work very well in those applications also.
Right, we've had medicinal honey used.
Ah, okay. I think the issue might be though that sugar is hygroscopic, which means that it will draw fluid.
Yes, that's the problem.
And that may be something that needs to happen. I mean, I don't know. But.
Actually, it promotes bleeding and it's hygroscopic. It promotes fluid flow.
Mm-hmm.
Both of those things generally are good things because it helps with circulation.
Ah, got it. Good. Okay.
Into the new tissue area.
Mm-hmm.
But it also means that her dressing gets really saturated.
Really messy. Yeah. Absolutely.
Pretty fast. And we can't really tolerate it being, closed up for more than a day or so.
Mm-hmm.
So it needs to be, where we are changing it at every two and a half days,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The problem is the tissue gets so soft and moist.
Oh, yeah.
That the callus becomes soft to the underlying tissue.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And when she walks, it moves.
Ooh.
So
what
I have
separation
to do,
and yeah, all that.
Right.
Okay.
So we have to actually be in a situation where if the callus separates, it has to be carved away
mm-hmm.
from the
mm-hmm.
underlying tissue. So what was been protected for, the last couple of months is
mm-hmm.
now no longer protected because we've had
yep.
to carve it away.
Yep. Yep. Yep.
Now that's part of that's good because that heavy callus needs to get out of there for the good tissue to form.
Yes. Yep.
But instead of having a little half a centimeter wide circle open still, it's now back up to a full centimeter across.
Mm.
So, getting this thing to close has been a royal pain in the butt, and it we're probably a long way away from it. But the sugar is supposed to promote granulation in the wound, which should help, skin tissue form around it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All kinds of good things, but
yep.
all kinds more work.
Yep, exactly.
Did you see this Twitter from Arkansas Traveler?
No, I'm not in. I'm outside. I'm not outside.
He said last 10 minutes of broadcast was overwritten by Clorox commercials and Sportscaster, but could hear you in the background.
Oh God!
What the hell is that?
I've got no idea. Well, I guess we'll hear that on the recording, and maybe we can get Blog Talk Radio to give an explanation and do something about it.
Yeah.
God, that's too bad.
Well, let's see. We'll have to see what's going on. All right. So, anyways, that's the deal with
yep.
that is concerned. Next week, I will make the formal announcement on our show about us moving.
Ah, okay.
It's more or less public around here.
Mm-hmm.
She has an attorney coming into the office on Friday that's interested in buying her practice.
Oh, how cool.
And two attorneys that are coming in from Milwaukee a week from Monday who are so interested they want us to be providing tax returns. So there will be a limit as to how much of those tax returns they can see.
Yeah, exactly.
But the section that's associated with the office itself, they'll be able to see.
Is Victoria Incorporated, or is she sole practitioner?
Sole practitioner.
Okay.
So all they'll see is the Schedule C.
Is the Schedule C for that, right. Yep.
So, and then we'll see where that goes. But the price that she has asked them, told them that she's looking for, we can support with our tax, with what we actually did report on the taxes.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Okay.
You know,
cool.
And actually, I'm kind of thinking that they might have cash.
Ooh. So these are not just a couple of new guys wanting to start out. This is an established practice that wants to expand.
Yes.
In that area. Okay.
Yes.
Cool.
The one that we're seeing on Friday is, in fact, an established attorney who has never done bankruptcy and wants to expand his practice into that area.
Yeah.
They are a slightly larger firm. He's a sole practitioner. They are a multi-attorney firm with multiple offices. We're talking two. I think there's six attorneys and two offices.
Mm-hmm.
He's
a
sole practitioner in one.
And the firm is a BK firm? Or?
Neither are BK firms.
Oh, really?
Both of them are interested in expanding. They will expand, take advantage of the practice to support a new office.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then expand their current practice out to here. So what they'll do is instead of starting a new office and then waiting for it to reach break even,
right,
they'll take over this practice and work this practice as a quote-unquote cash cow to support the building of their other practice out here.
Got it.
That's a reasonable point of view, and it's less expensive to do that with an ongoing practice than the other way around, even if they're not planning on permanently, you know, doing bankruptcy. It'll give them a broader reach for things. So
if they have any expertise in BK law at all, they'd be fools not to get into it.
Right.
I mean, that's a growth industry. I'm sorry.
Right. And, at this particular point, we may not be able to sell the house because the market sucks, but her practice has actually gotten a lot more valuable, this year.
Yep.
So that might actually work out. Given the choice between the guy that's a sole practitioner who might have some money and then we'd have to take back paper versus the others that are, might be a little bit harder negotiating with, but, can put cash on the table.
Yep.
In either case, it's likely to be enough money to make our move.
Excellent.
Less of an issue.
Good.
And, she's asking for enough money that we could simply buy the RV that we're talking about, and I still have the money in the bank that I want to have when we pull into California.
Got it.
Because she asked me, she goes, what would make you comfortable about going to California? I said, have $15,000 in the bank.
Okay.
No bills.
Yep.
No, all the expenses of moving taken care of.
Yep.
When we cross into the California border, there's $15,000 in the bank. business. We got 15 grand in the bank and the moving has been taken care of. I said, I'll be comfortable with that.
Cool.
You know, because, you know, five to get us established, five to build up things, and five to cover us, you know, while we make a little bit of a transition. We don't have a big transition because my business will continue to, you know, exist regardless of where I go. Which, by the way,
yeah,
the National Association of Consumer Bankruptcy Attorneys had their national conference last week.
Oh.
In Chicago.
Oh, really?
And some of my clients were at the conference.
Oh, really?
So I was able to go down to Chicago on Friday and meet them.
How cool.
And I took a couple out to dinner.
I thought I saw something on Twitter on that.
And spent a shitload of money.
Yeah. Customer relations.
Dinner was not cheap.
No, I bet not. Not in Chicago.
But I took them to, you know, it was. Once it was set that it was going to happen, I said, okay. Now, none of these people have been to Chicago once or twice before.
Mm-hmm.
None of them live there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's going to be a Friday night. Where do I take these people to dinner? Now, the conference hotel is in downtown Chicago, Michigan Avenue. I don't know if you know anything about Chicago. Michigan Avenue, you know, big, hunky, you know, big, expensive shopping area. It's the Marriott downtown Chicago.
Wow.
So, you know, and it's the part of Chicago that they're in the part of Chicago where, you know, there's 1,000 restaurants within a mile and a half of where they're at.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
But it's also Friday night. In Chicago, and the weather was great. So weather was great. Friday night Chicago, you know, they're in the place where everybody is going out to dinner, and they're, you know, there's half a dozen conferences going on in Chicago at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, where do I take them, you know, that's likely to be there? Now, I'm from there. I should know a place that could be a little bit out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
That nobody would know unless you know it's there, yet would still be very nice and wouldn't cost me $500 for the night.
Uh-huh.
And I finally thought of somewhere that my boss, when I was working down there, took us to Christmas dinner. And where that restaurant was.
Yeah.
From 1987, when I came back from California.
Yeah.
That restaurant was within 1 mile of every employer that I worked for in Chicago until I left.
Wow. And
it was within walking distance of all but one.
Whoa.
It's amazing that I had to work that hard to think of it. but it was a steakhouse, and, you know, the meat there is butter. I mean, you know, it was expensive, but butter.
Yeah.
You know, the meat was really, really, really good. We had a very good time. We were in that restaurant for 3.5 hours.
Oh, my gosh.
And I spent less than I had taken down with me, but more than I had hoped.
Yeah. Okay.
That was fine. It was a good thing, but the one thing that I found out was rather interesting is they all said exactly the same thing. You may have been aware of this. Bankruptcy runs in a cycle during the course of the year.
Yes, it does.
Okay. So starting in, you know, late January, February, it gets really, really busy to about the end of April.
Mm-hmm.
And then it tapers off a little bit and then picks up again right around June, the end of June, July. And it slows down for the end of August. then it picks up again in September to about Thanksgiving, and then it dies off until it comes back.
Yeah.
Since the law has changed, it really hasn't been that way.
Really?
06 was really weird because, you know, we just flushed so much business out of 06 into 05.
Right, right, right.
You know, but once it started coming back in 06,
mm-hmm.
There was no real cycle.
Really?
There's, like, been little waves.
Yeah.
But you don't have dead zones, you know, periods. You know, real busy and then dead for 6 to 10 weeks.
Mm-hmm,
real busy
mm-hmm,
and then
mm-hmm.
dead. It hasn't. It's been pretty much a constant, steady growth.
Wow.
And all of them have said that.
Wow.
And I was talking to the one set of attorneys that was not there Friday.
Mm-hmm.
He called me today to talk about something, and he said, I hope you're ready. It hasn't really slowed down, but let me tell you, it's picking up a lot.
Oh, God. Well, you know that corresponds with something that I heard today, or maybe it might have been yesterday, and that is for... let's see, this is 09. For 2010, there is at least one person forecasting 10 million foreclosures.
Well, I was talking to Victoria about that yesterday,
mm-hmm.
about what they were saying, and then when he called this morning, he called around 9:30 this morning,
mm-hmm.
and we were talking about it. We had 4 phone calls from noon until 2 o'clock. New clients. All new clients.
Wow.
We're not doing any advertising. We haven't changed anything.
Wow.
I don't know what's going on, but, you know, everyone is saying the same thing. Phones this week have just simply gone crazy. What is I don't know what's driving it. Unless this GM thing has just absolutely scared the shit out of people.
Well, it should.
You know what? You and I have made predictions as far as unemployment
yeah.
is concerned.
I think our predictions are low. And not soon enough.
Yeah, I think we're at a situation where I'm not going to be surprised to see 700,000 in May.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
If we see 700,000...
For May, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
If
no,
we see
that 700,000
in May, then we've got 9.4 with
well,
May.
Well, California's 10-something.
Yeah. If we hit 9.4 nationwide now...
Yep.
You know,
yeah.
and we're not even seeing all the big GM numbers really slamming into us.
Nope, not yet.
You know, Chrysler and GM, you know, production are both going to suck. You know, we could see another 700,000 or 800,000 next. We could be at 9.8, 9.9, you know, by the end of June.
Yep. Absolutely. We were way too optimistic, kiddo.
Isn't that ridiculous?
Isn't it? Oh, Jesus.
And let me tell you, you know, I'm hearing something that I don't hear very often.
Oh, yeah?
Every one of those phone calls said exactly the same thing. Every one of them said exactly the same thing. We're not behind yet on anything.
Hmm.
These are people that are coming to us at exactly the right time.
Yeah, exactly. They're going to maximize their ability to keep stuff.
Right, absolutely. Yep. You know, instead of stripping themselves bare, trying to stay afloat, get rid of all the excess now. You know, cut ourselves down to the minimum, and we'll stand longer
mm-hmm.
and fight less doing it.
Yep, absolutely. Smart people, good for them, good for them.
Well, you know, if the smart people are heading for the bankruptcy courts,
mm-hmm. yep.
There's no. there's no bet that I'd make as to what it'll be.
Yeah, I know.
This district is on pace to do 9,000 bankruptcies this year.
Oh, my gosh.
To give you an idea where that stands. Now, we did 12,000 bankruptcies when the law changed.
Okay.
The year before the law changed was a record in this district, 7,700.
Oh, boy.
You know, we're on track to hit 9,000. We're already at, we're just under 4,000 right now.
Hmm.
You know, we're on track to hit 9,000 by the end of the year at the current pace.
Yeah.
And if today is any indication and what the others are telling me is any indication,
then that's going to accelerate.
That's going to accelerate. You know, we could hit 10. We hit 10,000 in this district.
Mm-hmm.
Then we're talking 2 million nationwide.
Wow. Wow. Jeez.
Now, that's a huge number. That's almost 50% higher than the average before the law changed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you know and I know that if we hit 2 million now, the majority of bankruptcies won't hit till next year.
Exactly.
From what's going on now.
Exactly. Exactly.
Next year and the following year.
Yep. Yep.
So, you know.
Yeah, well, I guess all that green shoot talk by Bernanke is so much
dead.
Whitewash, huh?
Yeah, and you know, and if somebody's talking 10 million foreclosures next year, you know, then we're looking at, you know, somewhere in the vicinity of 3 million bankruptcies.
Yeah.
3 million bankruptcies. A whole fuckload of bankruptcies.
Oh, man. You know, that starts to approach numbers where people start taking the law into their own hands. I mean, it truly does.
Well, it is deflationary, and it is a spiral that needs to be broken.
Mm-hmm.
But nothing, you know, I said this both on a post and on Twitter. Every single thing Bush did wrong, Obama is accelerating.
Yes.
And every single thing Bush did right, he's breaking.
Yep. I mean, you know, I have not subscribed to your theory in the past, but I'm getting real close to saying, yep, that's what's got to happen. Don't collect taxes for a year. Just let it go.
The system is going to need some kind of a shock.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's no way to spend enough to cause that shock. None.
No. And the traditional incremental changes in tax rates aren't going to do it either. Not at this point.
Right. Right.
So I am reluctant. I am reluctantly climbing into your wagon, there, lady.
Well, yeah. You know, the thing with incremental changes is if you know incremental changes, you know, affect the economy positively when it's already begun its move positive.
Yes.
It accelerates, it firms up that motion.
Yep, and it gives
okay.
people
we
some confidence.
We need something to stop what's going on.
Exactly. And there isn't anything that I see in the hopper that does that.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, there's one thing in the hopper that does, and it means a whole lot of bad shit. You know.
What? Did I miss something?
I'll put together a nice, solid war.
Ah.
Not Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
Not Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about a mobilization war.
Oh, shit. I don't know that we can do that.
Oh, I'm absolutely positively convinced that we could. But there's exactly only one opponent on the planet that would require that type of mobilization.
China.
China.
Yep.
And there's nothing good there. Nothing.
No. In fact, I'm not even sure that that's a winnable war.
It will certainly depend upon your definition of win.
Yeah, you're right. Let me see. If I dumbed down my definition of win, I could probably spin it. And my dumbed down definition of, you don't annihilate us and we get to withdraw.
I would define win as a functional planet.
Yeah, well, that would be another good plus, yeah. Oh, man.
You know, because we can't, no matter how good we are,
mm-hmm.
you know, and we have the capacity to produce incredible weapons,
mm-hmm.
The Chinese are posleen.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, mass has a quality all its own.
Right. You know,
yep.
And
that's
what
the Russians believed.
You know, that's what the posleen were. You know, posleen, you know, in the stories, in the books, you know, you had a brigade and a company, and, you know, military commanders would say, are you holding them off? And they went, yeah, we're killing 2 and 3 posleen with every shot. Well, that's great. Well, no, we only have 500,000 rounds. Well,
mm-hmm.
what's wrong with that? Well, apparently we're facing 10 million.
Uh-huh.
So if you're
killing, that'd be a problem.
If you're killing 1,000 to 1, which is a great kill ratio.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but you're outnumbered 10,000 to 1.
Yep.
You're fucked.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, and that's our problem with China. Yeah, we can kill 1,000 to 1. We might even be able to kill 2,000 or 3,000 to 1, but we're outnumbered 10,000 to 1.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, and so that's the problem. No, I don't know what kind of shock. You know, everything he's doing is accelerating it. Everything Bernanke and Geithner are doing are accelerating this.
Yeah, they are.
You know,
well, I don't know. I am almost ready to pull the trigger for precious metals. The more I look at this, the more I'm thinking, man, I've been on the sidelines. I got out of the market, sitting on cash. And I'm saying, nope, cash is not king anymore. They're going to devalue that to the point that it isn't going to be worth anything.
Well,
so then I've got to say, well, okay, what does that leave me? That leaves me commodities.
Well, see, the biggest commodity you have, in my opinion, is the same one that I have sitting right here.
Mm.
You know, I've got a roof over my head.
Mm, yeah.
And I own it.
Yeah. Subject to annual taxes, of course, but yeah.
You know, you have better than a roof over your head. You've got a buffer around it.
Yep.
You know, and I understand the problems you guys have with weather and stuff like that.
Yeah, well.
You know, but I bet you could probably live off your land if you were really
willing.
If I put
my mind to it, I could. Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, I can't, but the eight of us in this neighborhood that share a yard...
Mm-hmm.
You know, 8 families, we could put, you know, 2 acres under pretty intensive cropping.
Wow. Wow.
You know, that's just our backyard.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, and we can seal it off fairly easily.
That's even
better.
You know,
but I'm moving out to California.
Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, you're moving down to an area that isn't all that hospitable.
Right.
Mm.
You know, and then every once in a while I'm sitting like going, you know, Tracy, you're just being way too pessimistic.
Yeah, is Victoria actually retiring or is she going to practice in California?
In order to practice in California, she doesn't have to take the full bar.
Mm-hmm.
It's a ethics and truncation bar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's a partial bar, and she is planning on doing so next year.
Okay.
However, no. For all practical purposes, she is retiring, and that's it.
Why San Diego then?
For her health. We're getting out of the winter.
Well, there's a lot of places in California you can get out of the winter without being in a major metropolitan area that is subject to being overrun by Mexico.
Well, I actually know Southern California pretty well, despite the fact that I've been out of there for a long time.
Yeah.
Because when I lived there, we did a lot of back area searchings.
Mm-hmm.
Those back areas are still there.
Yeah.
What I would call defensible back areas.
Right.
What I suggested to Victoria all along, I said, when the shit hits the fan, and the shit will hit the fan, it may not in your lifetime, it may not in my lifetime, but it's going to hit the fan in CJ's lifetime.
Yes.
When the shit hits the fan, we need three things. I said, we need land, we need food, and we need defense.
Yep.
I said, where we are right now, we can do the land, we can do the food, and I said, it's relatively defensible, taking in consideration all of our neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
But California, we don't have neighbors.
Nope.
It's less defensible, less food, because while California might be a really great agricultural place, any place where we would be living is desert.
Yep.
She just doesn't get that idea that San Diego is desert.
Oh, man. Okay.
San Diego may be nice and it's right along the coast, but there's, a nice little hill zone, right there along the coast. I said, it goes all the way up to San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
I said, you get the other side of those hills, and you're in desert.
Absolutely.
You're in desert until you hit the Rocky Mountains.
Yep.
And, I said...
And if you take the southern route, you got to wait until you get to Arkansas and Louisiana before you get out of desert.
Right. So, you're about the upper edge of that desert area.
Yeah, you get about,
Well, I call it Stockton, but you're a little bit farther up.
Yeah, I'm further up. I'm pretty due east of Redding. That part of the valley has enough water that and it gets enough rainfall that I don't think you can qualify it as desert. But you get up over the mountains, up over Lassen, and on the other side, and there you go. You're in that High Plains desert.
So,
not a place that you want to be.
And, I'm not a pleasant person.
Okay.
And I can be downright ruthless. There's no doubt about that. It's not bluster or bravado about it. Been there, done that.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm taking us out of a defensible situation into a considerably less defensible situation, and that makes me uncomfortable.
Absolutely. Well, which is prompted my question, God, why San Diego? I mean, there are good, warm places that do not have severe winters that are far more suitable to being able to hang on to when everything comes down than San Diego. And if you want to be that close to the coast, then, you travel up north and you get up above Santa Barbara and along in there.
Well, actually, that's where we looked. When we were out there, the last time we were out there.
Uh-huh. Okay.
We were looking just north of Santa Barbara.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And the reality was the money was nuts.
Ah, got it. Yep.
You know,
yep.
We could own this house free and clear,
mm-hmm.
which is
mm-hmm.
in the upper 5% of houses price-wise of the entire county.
Mm-hmm.
We could own this place free and clear, and it would barely be a reasonable down payment in Santa Barbara.
Well, yeah. No, I mean, it's got to be one of those kinds of things, just like San Diego. You're not in San Diego. You're outside of that where prices get more reasonable.
Yeah.
You can't be right in Santa Barbara.
DJ, if you need my help, come on back down. I am concerned by it. But there's enough places in California that I can probably do something with.
Oh yeah. Absolutely. And I will make the offer to you, Tracy. You know, if the shit really hits the fan and you got to run, I'm here.
I appreciate that.
You betcha.
The other advantage that I wanted to was to be in a situation where before the shit hit the fan,
mm-hmm.
that we could be making good money.
Yep.
Because I it's not because I want to put money in the bank. That's not the issue.
Mm-hmm.
Is there's certain things that I can be buying with money
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
that gives me greater freedom.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well,
alrighty,
let's hope
kiddo.
That I'm being really more pessimistic than I need to be.
You know what? I think it's a whole lot better to be pessimistic and not have to use it than it is to be la-di-da and find out later that, oops, I should have been pessimistic.
True enough.
Yeah. Okay, kiddo. Have a good one.
We'll talk to you.
Yeah. Bye.
Bye.